Learn to care.
Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer has been reinstated? Hired? Fired? Wait, which one is... Is he the one that's been chucked out on the sexual abuse charges, or he's the one that got hired because of sexual abuse charges?
He is the one that... the sexual abuse charges were against the wide receiver coach,
right?
Zach Smith.
It was one of his subordinates.
But so he this morning the Ohio State Board of Trustees met to discuss his future, of Urban Meyer. It was like, and obviously this is an extreme example.
It's currently
suspended. Like,
I know.
Yeah,
that.
It was like cardinal law with the priests.
Yeah.
It was that sort of thing where, like, he didn't actually physically himself do anything, but he was aware and didn't handle it properly.
Swears up and down he didn't know it happened, even though his wife apparently knew.
But, it turned out, like, it was supposed to be just, like, a quick session, and it ended up being, like, the entire board meeting in private with, like, the people who investigated all of this. But it's sounding like they didn't come to a conclusive conclusion quite yet, but, or at least maybe they have since I looked at the update of this, but it did sound like his suspension was going to stay, but that he was going to be reinstated while Zach Smith, his termination would be upheld.
This is a little bit like the Joe Paterno situation, where you have the winningest coach in college football, and someone on the staff was doing a bad thing, and it's like, what matters more, that we win or that we snuff out every bit of potential abuse allegations? And yeah. I think the fact that this wasn't a sexual abuse case. This was the assistant coach was beating his wife, wasn't he? Was it domestic violence?
It had something that was personal, but then it tied over. I don't think it was sexual abuse. I think it was physical abuse.
Yeah, I think
it kind of trickled over, which is when it started to become I can't really look the other way because this isn't just your personal life anymore. This is...
Yeah. As I recall in this case, dude's a scumbag and he's beating up his wife, which, you know, no excuse whatsoever. But... that tells you what the line in the sand is. The line in the sand is kids. If children are harmed, you lose your job, even if you're the winningest coach in school history. If kids weren't harmed, go finish the season. you keep doing what you're doing. We need some wins.
Well, and if you... if you look at his record too, it's like 73-8.
Yeah,
he has an unbelievable record.
Believe me, if they let Urban Meyer go, some other school would have picked him up immediately.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't. I mean, Joe Paterno. If Joe Paterno had been a younger man, if he'd been in his 50s and 60s, and not dying
of
cancer, not dying of cancer, he would have been picked up by another school because the guy is that good. I don't know who knew what. You know, not my place to say. I think if the guy knew, he should not be coaching.
Mm.
All right? If you're going to tolerate someone who works for you beating up their wife because he does a good job, I got no use for you.
I was going to say, and it has
That's not how you win with honor.
I mean, so often people will try to do the argument of it's a, for lack of a better term, separation of church and state, where they'll say, as long as it doesn't trickle into his professional life, then we don't really have a right to say anything about his personal life. But more often than not, these things find a way to trickle down. I mean, even just think of Louis C.K. For years, Louis C.K. was exposing himself to comedy club waitresses and to random fans.
Yeah, but he always
like
asked first.
Oh, well, he's a polite pervert.
He asked
but
first.
Then,
I put him in a different category.
I'm just saying, I'm not trying to say that he's the same as this guy, but I'm just saying it was one of those things where everyone looked the other way until it started happening with comedians that he was working with.
Yeah.
Until it did trickle into the professional side. I feel like that's always the trouble with anyone who's successful professionally but has this background. It's like when all the allegations came out about Michael Jackson, where it was, okay, well, if what he's being accused of is true, it's not cool, man. But he's a really good singer. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's always a tricky situation where you're like, I know that what they're being accused of, if it's true, is very, very wrong. But where do I draw the line between what I have a right as someone's colleague to have an opinion on?
Well, he's not just a colleague, he's the boss.
As someone, as a coworker, as however you want to.
If I'm giving you money and I am paying for your lifestyle, and your lifestyle includes going home and beating a defenseless woman or beating anybody, I'm not paying you anymore. All right?
I think that's fair.
I will let someone else have that on their conscience. I don't care how good you are. If you are a monster to other people, I should not be giving you money. And it would be nice if the university took that attitude with Urban Meyer, but we know where the line is drawn now. No children were harmed, so Urban gets to keep his job. Worcester.
This is sports?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I have no idea.
There's only one Worcester sports story.
I don't know any Worcester sports
stories. Say hello to the Woo Sox.
What?
The AAA affiliate. Red Sox will be heading to Worcester in 2021, pending approval by the Worcester City Council.
Oh, that is right.
They will play instead
of Pawtucket.
They will play in a brand new 10,000-seat stadium.
Snap.
Worcester will take out a $100 million loan. Worcester will take out a $100 million loan.
Oh, man.
Which it hopes to pay back in new tax revenue to pay for this.
If ever I very graphically pictured a check bouncing.
So here's what, we're not going to spend any taxpayer money on this. We're not taking any taxpayer money on this. We're just going to take out $100 million loan.
And keep our fingers crossed that this works.
And pay it off with new tax revenue.
Oh, my God.
You're going to tell me that Larry Lucchino can't find $100 million in his sock drawer? I mean, this is a manhood measurement thing among these sports team owners now as to who can get a city or a state to pony up the most cash for their stadium when they should be paying for it themselves. This is a boondoggle. And I have every bit of respect for the state of Rhode Island and the city of Pawtucket that looked at this and they were like, we're not giving you $100 million. Go kick rocks. And Worcester Rocks walks in and they're like, we're dumb. We'll pay for it. This is going to revitalize Worcester.
Was it ever vitalized?
Nice. This is a long, long, long time ago. A long time ago.
I would say, at least in the amount of time that I've been alive, every time I say I'm going to Worcester, I get the exact same reaction, which is, why are you going to Worcester?
Yeah. It's these public funded stadium deals. Plus the state's going to kick in $33 million of infrastructure around the stadium, which, by the way, is going to be paid for with taxpayer dollars. So, you know, yes, we're not spending money to build the stadium, but we're spending money for the pipes.
For everything else involved.
And roads and electricity that will keep the stadium operational. And by the way, Shay, can you think of a better use of taxpayer money? In a time when we have an affordable housing crisis, an opioid epidemic, than a sports stadium in the Northeast that is only useful on a seasonal basis?
And isn't even for a professional sports team?
Can you think of a better use of $100 million? Gosh darn it, I know I can't.
Maybe this is all a ruse and the stadium is actually going to be just one giant methadone clinic.
For 5 months out of the year, that's
what it should be.
That's going to be the best use of taxpayer money imaginable.
Use that real estate, man.
For 5 months out of the year, best use of taxpayer money imaginable. And maybe the state will get lucky and all the opium addicts will freeze to death.
Don't know why.
Oh, what a lovely note to send out the news on.
Sorry, Lena. No sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. Boston 5-day forecast.
Mm-hmm.
Folks,
don't sound too excited.
Folks, no. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Looking ahead, Labor Day weekend, not looking too good. So if you're looking to get that last great summer weekend in, take Monday off. Go do it this weekend. Tonight, temperature is going to fall down into the 60s. It's going to be comfortable and nice. Low humidity dominates for the next 3 days. Partly cloudy tomorrow. Highs in the 70s, upper 70s. Lows in the 60s again tomorrow night. Friday, sunny. High of 84. Lows in the mid-60s Friday night. Saturday, partly cloudy. That means mostly sunny. Highs in the low 80s. Lows in the mid-60s. Sunday, partly cloudy once again. Highs in the low 80s. Lows around 70 degrees. You'll feel the humidity start to crawl up a little bit. And then Monday, mostly sunny. High around 90. Lows in the 70s. Snap. Low 70s Monday night. So we got one more little stretch of hot and humid. And then we're
said, boom, boom, boom,
then
boom.
We're pretty much out.
Feeling hot, hot, hot.
And we're pretty much out.
Hey, knock on some wood. Remember, what's that thing that happens in the middle of September? Indian summer?
Yes. Oh, you can get that. But that's not usually humid. It's a dry
heat. That's true.
Heat.
It's usually like L.A. heat.
But for those of you thinking ahead, thinking about your Labor Day weekend, right now it's looking like rain all 3 days. So that's what you want to be aware of. That forecast could change between now and then, but if you're looking to have a nice three-day weekend, I'll tell you right now, skip work Friday, skip work Monday, call in sick, get it in now, and then you can stay at home.
I'm going to be in New York.
Well, it rains next
Nicely
weekend.
Nicely done.
When we come back, the Pope issues an unprecedented letter to the faithful over some very disturbing allegations coming out of Philadelphia here on WMFO, Medford.
Ready for a change of pace in your diet? Well, think lamb. If you buy a whole leg of lamb, you can have part of it cut into sirloin, chops, and steaks, and you can serve the remainder as a roast. Be sure to look for the U.S. Department of Agriculture grade shield with the letters USDA and the word prime or choice. It's your sign of quality. For more information on lamb, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Dear God, is there somebody out there? Is there someone to hear my prayer? I'm a simple man with simple words to say. Is there some point in asking, asking for more? Only God is where we are today. Lost and alone and afraid. Give me
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my pal, Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call and chime in, we love hearing from you. It's 855-915-WMFO. And Pope Francis, good old Papo.
Papi.
Good old Papo.
Il Papo.
On Monday, he did something that no Pope has ever done before, which is issuing an open letter to all Catholics condemning the atrocities regarding clerical sexual abuse. And the thing is, he, and this is in response to the recent allegations that have come out of Pennsylvania, along with just countless other instances of reports of sexual abuse among the Catholic Church. But the thing is, he used some strong words. He said, we abandon them. Quote, with shame and repentance, we acknowledge as an ecclesial community that we were not where we should have been, that we did not act in a timely manner, realizing the magnitude and the gravity of the damage done to so many lives. We showed no care for the little ones. We abandoned them. And okay, as Derek mentioned, as you mentioned earlier in the show, I was raised extremely Catholic. Like, War Cross was head of youth group.
Hardcore Catholic.
And I remember when
It's Shay Spillane. She's on her knees for Jesus.
Not anymore. But I remember when, I'm trying to think of how old I must have been, but I remember when the news broke of the sexual abuse among the Archdiocese of Boston.
The 1990s was the first cases showed up in the mid-90s.
I was like in my early teens.
Yeah.
And I remember on the one hand, I think it's great that Pope Francis stepped up and was like, look, we screwed up. Like, this should have been handled better. This should have never happened. This should have been handled better. We should have done this. That's the thing, is that he said, this should have been handled in a different way, but he never says the way. He never says what the actual solution is. It's like, it's like if a husband screams at his wife repeatedly and says, well, I'm sorry, I screamed at you. But it's like, okay, well, you're going to go to anger management. Are you gonna try some new tactics? Are you gonna? And I think that like what really makes this hit home for me, like even my godfather, so the person who's supposed to guide me through my faith for my whole life, was one of the priests that was named back in the 90s. I haven't seen him in two decades, and it's one of those things that's very difficult to me, and especially even thinking about, you know, so much of this abuse took place in the 60s and 70s makes me think, like, this is my father, my uncles were all altar servers, and God knows I would never ask or imply, but it really hits home for someone who, and as our listeners know, I no longer have any sort of religious faith, and not just for that reason. That's one factor in a basket full of factors. But as someone who was basically raised blindly faithful, you think about teachers you have growing up that you look up to, that are there for you. You think of all the people who are not your parents, who are not your relatives growing up, that you're supposed to be able to look to and say, I can 100% trust this person. I can literally put all my faith in that this person is not going to do me wrong or steer me in the wrong direction or take advantage of the trust that I place in them.
My heart goes out to the people of Pittsburgh and the six dioceses around Pittsburgh that are affected by this. There was a multi-year grand jury investigation that found more than 1,000 instances of abuse involving more than 300 priests dating back to 1945 was the earliest year that I could find in there. So what Pittsburgh is getting right now is what Boston endured over the course of about a dozen years, from the first court cases in the early 1990s to the Spotlight series, which has since been made into a movie in the early 2000s, that exposed the breadth of the problem. And it will probably come as a surprise to no one here in Boston that the scope of the issue in Pittsburgh is every bit as large and every bit as institutional and every bit as far-reaching as it was here in the city of Boston. We know from our own experience that it was policy in the church to move these priests around, mm-hmm. to send them to other parts of the country where they would just go and offend again. There is a priest somewhere here in Massachusetts who has been removed from service because his name is mentioned in this Pittsburgh investigation.
And that's, well, and I think that what makes this such a difficult issue, it should not make it a difficult issue, mind you, but what makes this such a difficult issue is that it is such a literally ancient tradition. It is such an, I know that it should never be an excuse of, well, this is just the way it's always been done. But when an institution such as the Catholic Church...
Oh, what do you mean you got touched by the priest? I got touched by the priest. Your father got touched by the priest. Your grandfather got touched by the priest. His father got touched by the priest. We all got touched by the priest.
Yeah, that's just what happens. Like, it's the same as, like, you know, the families and not all Irish families are like this, but like a lot of Irish families, it's normal to spank your children.
Yeah.
And other people might look and say, you shouldn't spank your children. That's horrible. Oh, you know, my father spanked me. His father spanked him. Like you said, and especially with something, like I said, I mean, when you were raised Catholic, which I always, when I went to I went to Catholic college, and I was shocked to find out that most people weren't Catholic. I just growing up in Boston, in this, you know, in the basically Quincy's like a suburb of Dorchester and Southie, but growing up in like the Irish Catholic part of Boston, I just assumed most people were Catholic.
We still had a few Protestants left in Melrose when I was living there.
But
that's, so.
I wouldn't say like I went to Catholic college. Literally, none of my friends were raised Catholic. They were all either like one of my friends was my best friend's an atheist, another one was raised Presbyterian, and most of my friends were Protestant. And
Catholics used to beat us up, but we got the last laugh because we had all the money.
I was like, well, that's like my Protestant friends would ask me, like, so what is it like being raised in the Catholic Church? And I'd say, like, well, you know, like how religious and devoted you're expected to be, multiply that by like a million. Like, we are the hardcore Christians. The only people more, like, hardcore are born-again Christians. Like, and it...
I think the reason they beat us up was because they had to spend every Wednesday in CCD while we're out, like, having a good time. You know,
you have to go sit in that closet and confess your sins.
With our ill-gotten Protestant millions.
But that's the thing, because it's, you know, like, I bet if you trace my family all the way back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, all Catholic. There was no conversion. There was no, like, I have one cousin that converted.
Well, there was some point when Ireland wasn't Catholic, when your family probably wasn't, because you go back that far.
Well, that's,
know, when some Viking came over and said, worship Thor now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, the last thing before Catholic was pagan.
Yeah. Bow down to Odin.
But it becomes such a, I don't want to say it's commonplace to be molested by a priest, but I'm saying that it becomes a, oh, that's just how they've always done it. It's just how it's always been.
But here's a point, and you're giving voice to this, which is why I'm letting you go on a bit. The one thing that I would say to the people in Pittsburgh, and people who know people in Pittsburgh, and people who are thinking and praying of the people in Pittsburgh, is to understand that the children who were molested and their families are not the only victims here. Everyone who is a member of the church is a victim here.
Oh, yeah.
Because
regardless of whether they themselves were physically abused.
That priest, who has now been named in the sexual assault allegations, probably played a pretty major role in your life.
Like I said, one of the ones that was named when all this broke in Massachusetts was my godfather.
Yeah.
He was, which for those of you who aren't familiar with Catholicism or Christianity, you're basically, traditionally, your godmother and godfather, if your parents die, that's who you go to. But in a realer, in the religious sense, it is the person who's supposed to be your spiritual and religious guide throughout your entire life. This is a man who, I think he married my parents too.
Yeah.
But like, this is a man who has been, who is a part of my family for 30 years.
But see, you go back to that. For your parents now, what should be the happy memories of their marriage are tainted by the knowledge that a child molester married them.
Yeah.
For anyone who had someone buried by a priest, for first communion, for confession, for just holiday mass, maybe you had the priest over to dinner, maybe you invited the priest on a family trip, and then you find out
this happened.
You're a child molester. That now infuses the fabric of your life in ways that cannot be undone.
Well, and it's beyond that. What's worse is, yes, it was horrible to find out about father. Who cares at this point? I don't even know where he is, but I'm not going to say his name on the radio. But the priest who was my godfather, it was horrible to find out about him. And obviously, I knew when I found out that was wrong. But what's even scarier is that, like I said, it's been so ingrained and so institutionalized that both aggressor and victim for a long time probably didn't even realize that it was something that was wrong, because it's been just such a part of the culture of, like I said, especially with altar servers, a culture of the priest altar server relationship, that it's just like, oh, of course he touched me in a weird place. That's what happens. Like, it's like, it, I mean, so I think what took, what has taken so long for all of these things to come to light and for it to be really pointed out, like, this is wrong, is that it was so commonplace that it, even if you felt in, you know, inside, even if you felt intrinsically that it was wrong, it's like I said, it's like people who, it's normal culture to spank their children. It's, even if you, your mom's spanking you and you're saying, this hurts, this doesn't feel like this is something that should happen. But then you think, oh, well, you know, my grandmother spanked her. So it, like, it's you, that's the scariest part about all this, isn't even just that it happened, but that for so long it wasn't like there, it wasn't, people's initial reaction wasn't like, this is wrong, I'm being violated, or like, this is wrong, I'm violating this person. It was just something that was so just a part of the culture that it was like, it took so long to be like, wow, maybe they shouldn't be diddling little boys. Maybe we should take another look at this. And maybe the another look shouldn't be, oh, let's just ship him somewhere else so he doesn't get in trouble.
But there was also this thing in the older generations where it was, you know, the priest was above all reproach. And because the priest presented himself as a man of God, he was believed to be a man of, you know.
I'm saying, well, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, why would
Pope-like
I question?
Pope-like morality.
Yeah, like, why would I question anything a priest does? He's above my father. I literally call him father. Because he is the moral high ground. If he's doing something, obviously it must be a holy thing to do because he's a priest. Like, it's different than, like, you know, if your t-ball coach is molesting you. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different dynamic.
But even in the cases,
I'm not saying it's okay for your t-ball coach.
And we saw the same thing happen in Boston. Even in the cases where the kids were believed by their parents and the parents did go to the church basically said, "Don't tell anybody about it. Don't call anybody."
Yeah, like, just shh.
We're going to take care of it. And the priest disappears. And in a number of these cases, because I read through a good, there's 1,500 pages of this thing.
It makes me sick.
Yeah. In a number of these cases, as adults, these people came forward because they found out the priest was still working with kids somewhere. They found out that the priest was at a school, or the priest was at seminary, or the priest was back leading mass. And they were like, you made a promise to me years ago, and I know what this guy's capable of. What's going on?
Which is crazy to think about. I mean, you consider, like, if a teacher sleeps with one of her students, she gets fired. She has to register as a sex offender. She can never work with children or anyone under the age of 18 ever again.
Those are recent developments, though.
I know, but I'm saying, like, it is...
And by the way,
it is weird, the fact that those are recent developments. You're right, but it's weird that once the Catholic Church started, or it's not even weird, it's insane that once the Catholic Church started recognizing, like, ooh, this is wrong, ooh, people are starting to get mad about this, their reaction was not, let's fire them, let's make them register as sex offenders. Their reaction was, oh, well, they can't be around Boston anymore, so let's ship them to Pittsburgh.
Right. It's important to remember one other thing that I'll say. And there was a lot of this that was going on in Boston at the time, between 1992, and especially after the Spotlight stories came out. There was this belief that sort of cropped up, and I remember talking about this on the air as the Spotlight thing was unfolding, mm-hmm. Where a lot of people were saying, why are all the pedos in the Catholic Church? Why is the Catholic Church full of pedophiles? And I said repeatedly at the time, this is by no means confined to the Catholic Church. If you look at other professions where people work with children, you are going to find similar numbers of offenders. And what has happened in the years since, as we have become more aware of what's going on in our public schools around the country, is we are finding that, yes, there are a very large number of teachers engaging in inappropriate sexual relationships with their students. So it's not... I think there's that sort of knee-jerk tendency to say, well, this is a priest thing. You're a pedo, so you became a priest. No. I don't think there are any more or less...
And there are plenty of priests who are not pedophiles.
I don't think there are any more or less predators in the Catholic Church than there are in the teaching profession, than there are in any other profession that works with children.
Well, adding to that, the irony is, and this is, I mean, just from, obviously, when all of this broke in Boston, everyone with a confirmation name got very curious and very interested about delving into this. But the irony, like, I have a priest that I grew up with that I'm still very close to. He actually, on the flip side of this, on the flip side of, you know, priests being moral and whatnot, when marriage equality passed in Massachusetts, the Archdiocese sent a video to every parish that they wanted them to show to their parishioners to basically tell them that homosexuality is evil and anyone who's gay is going to hell. Yeah. And this priest that I'm still in touch with, who is the pastor the pastor of the church I grew up in, was like, I'm big fat not showing them. So he ended up, he was the pastor of one of the biggest, of the most downtown church in Quincy, and now is the pastor at a church in, I believe it's Westford, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So they don't just ship pedophiles off, but...
They ship you off for not following the rules.
But I remember speaking to him about this when it broke, and he agreed with everything that we have said thus far, but he said that the irony is that not all, but some of these priests with these tendencies, part of why they became a priest is because they are so religiously devout. They know that these urges are not something that is okay in society. So it's almost... not therapeutic, but it's like, okay, well, if I just devote my life to Christ, if I just devote my life to religion, maybe, or to my religion and my beliefs, maybe, not that they'll be cured, but that it's almost like a safe, like a safe place for them to still exist within society.
Yeah, it's like believing you can pray the gay away. Doesn't work.
Yeah, I was gonna say, exactly. Like that's what he said, is the irony is that there, and again, not all of them, but there are some of these priests that it was the case, and what it ended up actually doing is putting them in the perfect position to get away with it.
Yeah, giving them opportunity and cover.
Yes.
Pope Francis doesn't give us much. He offers two suggestions for how we can fix this. He thinks you should fast. He says fasting is going to solve the problem. Here's what he says.
I can't believe I used to blindly follow this religion.
I invite the entire holy faithful people of God to a... to a penitential exercise of prayer and fasting following the Lord's command. This can awaken our conscience and arouse our solidarity and commitment to a culture of care that says never again to every form of abuse. The Pope also offers this. Clericalism, whether fostered by priests themselves or by laypersons, leads to an exclusion in the ecclesial body that supports and helps to perpetuate many of the evils that we are condemning today. To say no to abuse is to say an emphatic no to all forms of clericalism. So he's basically saying the structure of the church and the investment of power at different levels of the church is part of the problem, that the laity should have a greater say in church operations. All right, I will take that as a possible working solution to this problem. Fasting?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're going to fast and we're going to think about it and we'll get back to you. That's what the Pope said.
I'll tell you right now, I spent 16 years not eating meat on Friday. I still sin just as much as I would have if I was having pepperoni on that pizza.
We're going to fast. We're going to think about it. We're going to get back to you. 855-915-9636. It is WMFO Medford. When we come back, we're going to talk about the newspapers. And what they did last Thursday.
The hundreds and hundreds of them.
And how it is the stupidest thing imaginable, and how one newspaper actually got it right and dunked hard on all of the other newspapers, including the Boston Globe, which was the ringleader of this thing. But before we do that, we're going to give Aretha Franklin something that Madonna did not at the VMAs on Monday night.
Brother James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. I'm Derek Gary, joined by Shea Spillane on the town with Mikey D, coming your way in a little over 20 minutes with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Stick around for that. Tune it in, rip the knob off the radio, run outside, tell the neighbors it's WMFO Medford. Give us a call, 855-915-9636, 855-915-WMFO. If you picked up a newspaper on Thursday, Shea Spillane, there is a very good chance, particularly if you picked up the Boston Globe, the boring broadsheet, as they call it over at the Herald, there is a very good chance that you read an editorial critical of President Donald Trump. Because the Boston Globe came up with this idea a couple weeks ago. You know, the president...
It's like a newspaper flash mob.
The president is saying all these bad things about the press. The president is saying all these bad things about journalists. We should get a whole bunch of newspapers together to combat that. The president is saying we are the enemy of the people. The president is accusing us of colluding to make his administration look bad. An allegation, by the way, that has been supported by reams of research showing that 90% of news coverage of President Trump is negative.
Negative.
Even when they have something good to say, they put a negative twist on it. The president is accusing us of colluding to make him look bad. So let's all get together. Let's get together hundreds of newspapers in a grand act of collusion to complain about the president's criticism that we are colluding. Are you following me, Shea Spillane?
I am. Well, let me say, though, that while so the editorials ranged, I mean, most of them were just exactly what you just said, or different versions of the same thing, which were, you know, he says we're the worst, but we're really important, and freedom of speech and freedom of the press, and blah, 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 blah.
This is the same crap you wrote in high school to pass your civics class.
But well, I did find it interesting that it, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was, can I say circle jerk on the radio?
Yeah, well, you just did, so, you know.
I muttered it.
Let's muttering it when it's picked up by the microphone is the same thing.
I said jerk-a-nerk.
Yeah, there we go.
But, it'd be one thing if it was just everyone saying different versions of the same thing. But I did find it, I think that what almost proved the point of
it this. Absolutely proved the point. The president is accusing you of collusion. You don't solve the problem by colluding.
No. I'm saying, yes, that was dumb. But I'm saying what proved the point of where, at least those with their hearts in the right place, where they were coming from, was the sheer fact that not all of these newspapers had editorials that were different versions of the same thing. Like if you look, like the Slidell Independent in Louisiana, they criticized it. Like their editorial they released that day, they said national media still doesn't know what to do with President Trump. So now they're crying to the American people about the names they've been called. Maybe if they focus on doing their jobs instead of worrying about their precious reputation, the American people might start getting real honest journalism again. And then James Schaefer in Politico said that he thinks it's absolutely going to backfire, which is kind of basically what you just said, Derek, which he said will provide Trump with circumstantial evidence of the existence of a national press cabal that has been convened solely to oppose him. And when the editorials roll off the press, all singing from the same script, Trump will reap enough fresh material to wail on them for at least another month.
Majority of these editorials.
Oh, I know, were the different versions of the same thing.
Began like this. But let me. America is a great nation. But to remain a great nation, we must have a free press. These attacks, these unfounded attacks by our president, yada, yada, yada. You could walk into an eighth grade social studies class and get the same level of writing and the same empty-headed, uncritical, self-aggrandizing defense of the press that poured forth from the editorial pages last Thursday.
Well, the one thing that I will say to, like I said, first of all, the point I was trying to make was just that, yeah, most of it was just puff pieces saying the different versions of the exact same thing. But I did think it was cool that there were many more that didn't follow suit, which kind of proved their point that in terms of, like, if you get at the core or at least the wholesome and pure point that they arguably were trying to make, it's that freedom of the press is important and the press should be able to say whatever they want, which was proven by that some of these people doing editorials said exactly the opposite of the point that the Boston Globe was trying to get across. But what was I going to say? But I do think that I do think it is important. I mean, yeah, this was pretty much all of them, you know, they're kind of acting like petulant teenage girls. But I do think it is important that at least it was in the editorial section of each of these papers. It would be outrageous if, like, the sheer fact that they did it in something, I mean, that's what the term editorializing
comes from. But, I mean, the Globe did a 2-page spread of nothing but this on their editorial. I mean,
still an editorial.
The Los Angeles Times dunked on this whole thing. Dunked on the Globe, dunked on every single newspaper that took part in this thing. In what probably was the best written, you mentioned Slidell. This was probably the best written piece of the day. And by the way, the Los Angeles Times over the last few months has actually sort of been stepping up their game and starting to behave like journalists again and giving some good balanced coverage on things. Their editorial, it was headlined, "The Los Angeles Times is not participating in today's nationwide editorial page protest against Trump's attacks on the press. Here's why." And then they proceed to lay out a number of arguments, but they ultimately come to this conclusion in the second to last paragraph. The third to last paragraph. And I quote, "We would not want to leave the impression that we take our lead from others or that we engage in groupthink." And that last word is
the
where they
groupthink
is where they really dunk on it, because that word is poison, absolute poison in liberal circles. When you start accusing a bunch of leftists of groupthink, they lose their minds.
Like, no, all of my thoughts are independent. What are you talking about?
And the Los Angeles Times knows exactly what it's doing when it puts that word in their editorial. And I read this and I was like, hot damn. I will go buy you guys a drink if I run into you, because
if you run into the Los Angeles Times.
And then they soften it, and they're like, "We mean no disrespect to those who have decided to write on this important subject today, but we will continue to write."
Come on, don't backpedal.
"But we will continue to write about the issue on our own schedule." It's like they know. If we end this editorial with the word groupthink, everybody's going to disown us.
Yeah, everyone's going to be really mad.
They're not taking our phone calls anymore. Sometimes we got to talk to their newsrooms.
Well, and especially I was going to say, you have to talk to each other's newsrooms, and especially you have to think too, which is something that before I entered like the entertainment industry and things like that, I really didn't ever think about, but there's a lot of turnover and such when it comes to people who write for newspapers and people who write for the news. Like for all the person that was in charge of this at the LA Times knows, they're going to be laid off next year and they're going to try to get a job at the Chicago Trib and they're not going to be able to. Like if they, you know what I mean? Like it's, you have to remember that it's very revolving, like every industry, it's a very revolving door and you never know, the enemy you make today might be the friend you need tomorrow.
Right.
That is pretty funny, though. I mean, and that's the thing is, I get where they're coming from, but again, it is just feeding. It's like when it's like if a man says that women are emotional and irrational, and then a woman irrationally and emotionally flips out at him. It's like, okay, well, you're kind of proving my point. I don't think that women, it was just the first thing that popped into my head because I've had that happen before where I was like, don't flip out at him. You're just going to prove the exact same thing that he just said. But it's kind of the same thing where it's like the intentions were good, but at the same time, it's you're playing into, instead of making a difference, you're playing into what the people you're talking to already think of you.
Somebody wrote a piece, I forget who it was, but somebody wrote a piece today talking about how first politicians and now the press just walk into, like Donald Trump leaves these big traps in the middle of the road and other politicians and the press just walk right into them. and they do exactly what he wants them to do because he is so good at corralling the message and pushing their buttons. And it's like, look, there are a lot of problems with this White House. There are so many problems with this presidency. But he has the media so riled up. And they're twitching at the end of a string.
I would say, like, the man might secretly be a genius.
They're like a worm on a hook before it gets tossed into the water. And the Los Angeles Times winds up being one of the few newspapers smart enough to see through this.
And be like, you're not going to catch me on that one.
And the Boston Globe looks like a bunch of dimwits, which they are. They are the poor cousins of the New York Times and always will be. You know, if you were really a real journalist worth anything, you wouldn't be in Boston. Boston is where you go to retire when you're done with the rat race, or it's where you go when you're on your way up. And if you're young and you've been at the Globe for a number of years, this is as far as you go. This is your destination.
Sorry to any friends that write for the Globe that are listening right now.
The one other good thing, well, if they're young and they're on their way up, that's fine. If they're your friends, they're probably on their way up. But they know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
There's always
the lifers.
There's always good people in every newsroom, but you know who the lifers are and you know why they're there. Yeah. There was one other great piece that came out, and I cannot recommend this highly enough. This is from the Chicago Tribune.
I was going to say, please mention that.
From Rex Hupke, who is their columnist, Hupke, if you're not familiar with him, wrote a column in the voice of his dog, a dog's letter to President Trump, stop calling humans dogs. It is hilarious. It is really absolutely hilarious. And I encourage you to read this. It's still up. It's free. ChicagoTribune.com, Rex Hupke. And one of the things that he says in here, I think you were trying to be mean. He's talking about, this is the dog writing. And talking about President Trump, that gives all these examples of Trump calling someone a dog.
I was going to say, and with such, not consternation, what's the word, but with such like forcefulness, like you feel like you're actually, you feel like a dog is actually writing this, like because it is so remarkably like perfectly done.
It also seems, and I quote, it also seems like you are not being smart because dogs are wonderful and intelligent and filled with love. And I do not think you were trying to call Omarosa or Mitt Romney or Ted Cruz or any of those other humans wonderful or intelligent or loving.
I was saying, I love how he keeps putting it. And then you called that female human a dog.
Yeah.
And then this is to me is one of the best lines in the whole thing. I understand you were the first president since William McKinley to not have a dog. That's weird. You don't have any animal friends, and that makes me suspicious. It's a great piece.
Brilliant.
I cannot recommend it enough. Chicago Tribune, Rex Hupke, a dog's letter to President Trump. Stop calling humans dogs. Listen, I'll support the newspaper collusion if we get... Because the thing about this, whether you love President Trump or you hate President Trump, you will love that column. Even if you are the staunchest Trump supporter in the world, it is so well written. It is such good satirical humor that you have to laugh at it. Because even if you love the president, there are things about him that you don't like.
Yeah.
And there are ways he behaves that you don't like. And this really cuts to the heart of that without getting into the whole, he's a fascist. And they do throw the word fascist out in there at one point, but it's done in sort of a self-deprecating way. So, yeah, you can probably find a complaint there. 855-915-9636. In less than 8 minutes, on the town with Mikey D.
Woody Woot.
Is going to roar in here with all the local music that you need to get you through the rest of the week. But when we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
MFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're wrapping things up here, and we're going to start that off by telling you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. For me, this is just a random story that I stumbled upon, but it made me so happy because I'm always complaining about the negative effects of the internet. And it's nice to know that a little viral tweeting can get some stuff done. A supermarket customer's tweet on stickers being placed over the opening of bagged deli meats, this is my pet peeve, by the way, got the attention of New Hampshire's governor and ended up resulting in change. A legendary town manager, Kevin Smith, recently took to Twitter to ask that the company, Market Basket, not put the price tag stickers over the zipper of the meat bag, saying it's impossible to open it without destroying the bag.
Yep.
Then, lo and behold, Governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu, responded, saying that he has to rebag cheese every time because of this problem, and it drives him crazy, too.
Uh-oh, now the government's involved.
I would say, once the governor came out, Market Basket answered that it would speak to all of its deli departments about it. And yesterday, both Smiths and Sununu tweeted that they went to check, and the stickers were moved to the center of the bag.
Wow.
Which, honestly, that drives me crazy. I never get why they do it, because it makes it impossible. It just tears the bag open when you do that.
You don't want to run afoul of Chris Sununu. I'm telling you that right now.
I was going to say, hey, small increments of change.
Government finally did something good.
Yeah.
Come on board. All right, kids. You like pasta? You really like pasta? You really, really, really like pasta? Tomorrow.
Everybody like pasta.
Tomorrow. You're going to want to be 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You want to be at www.pastapass.com. Olive Garden is going to be selling 23,000 unlimited pasta passes, all the pasta you can eat for the next year for $300. $300, all the pasta you can eat at Olive Garden.
I mean, you'd have to really like Olive Garden, though.
They did this last year, and they sold out 22,000 in a matter of seconds.
Really?
Yes. So...
I guess, is it all different? You can get any kind of pasta, so it's not just always like spaghetti and tomato?
There's limits on it, but basically, they're selling 20, that's 1,000 more they're selling this year. 23,000 passes, 52 weeks, all the pasta you can eat at Olive Garden.
Theoretically, if you ate it once a week, it costs you $2 per
$300
giant plate of pasta.
There are only 23,000 of these. www.pastapass.com. Call your favorite Olive Garden addict
and let them know tomorrow, 2 o'clock Eastern, www.pastapass.com, year of pasta for $300. They're also going to be selling unlimited access for 8 weeks for $100. So if you really love pasta, but, you know, you don't want diabetes, they got a short-term option.
You don't want carb-tasticness in your life?
Either way, I think your doctor's going to be recommending insulin.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture with That's a Thing That Happened, which is the weirdest news story that we could find from last week. For me, a man who broke into a Connecticut church and stole $3,000 worth of electronics apparently felt enough remorse to leave an apology note. Police have released video of the man they say broke into Mount Olive AME Zion Church in Waterbury at about 1 a.m. Sunday and stole cameras, monitors, and a microphone used to broadcast religious services. Members of the congregation said that he also left a note that said, "Pray for me, sorry brothers, save me," and drew a little sad face. Member Craig Smith said some members of the congregation heeded the note and actually prayed for the suspect at a later service. See, this is why I can't be religious anymore. I would not be dropping prayers on that thief.
It's mighty Christian of you, is what I got to say to that. That is mighty, mighty Christian of you. Portugal. A museum in Porto is hosting an exhibit by a contemporary sculptor, Anish Kapoor, that includes a giant hole in the floor. To the shocking surprise of at least a few people, someone fell into it. An Italian art lover in his 60s.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Did it get hurt?
An Italian art lover in his 60s completed Capo's descent into limbo when he tumbled into the hole, which is painted so black that it reflects no light. Limbo is apparently 8 feet down, far enough to land the man who fell in the hospital for a few days.
Oh.
It's a giant hole in the floor. There's no barrier around it. It's a big hole.
I was going to say, I don't know if that's on the man or the artist.
I'm surprised they're not fishing people out of this thing every other hour.
It's like when they put koi ponds in like the middle of a pathway in office lobbies.
Yeah.
Where you're like, how do like 13 people a day not fall in this koi pond?
Yeah. And actually, sooner or later, somebody does wind up falling into the koi pond.
Yeah.
Or how about the men's room that doesn't have any toilet paper in any of the stalls? We love that one, too.
Or the one that's just like a big, giant trough with ice cubes.
Yeah.
I've never seen one in real life, but I've heard rumors.
I don't get what the ice cubes are about. I never understood the ice cubes in the men's room.
I imagine it's just kind of fun to see how powerful your urine is, that you can just break down ice.
Makes no sense to me whatsoever. On the Town, Mikey D is coming your way in just a matter of seconds right now. Next week, kids, I'm going to be filling in for Chris Earle.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing Watch This, and I will be doing Watch This. I'll be doing a show about movies, and I'll come up with some kind of a fun theme between now and then. I think I might actually talk about crappy movies next week, like the worst movies ever made.
If I get out of work early enough, maybe I'll come play.
You are going to come early next week because we're going to do See It, Skip It, Rent It together. So I need you here at quarter.